Can you hear me? No. All right. So, hello. My work as an artist actually began with 20 years ago in a small Greek Orthodox monastery. And while that strand continues, as you can see in my art making, subsequent to that, I've also worked through a number of other areas, most recently completing a Master's of Fine Art in Conceptual Art. The thesis for that work was actually around this word, local color. And local color is a fairly obscure word that's actually used in pottery to describe the color of the material used to create the work, whether that's a Rodin sculpture or a little bowl. The local color is the color of the material that the structure is made of, even if you can't see it, even if it's completely glazed over. So in the time I spent kind of stretching the definition of this, there were a couple things I wanted to take further with this term. The first was to make local and actually continue to explore it as being place-based. And the other was to actually, in that, also draw some culture. I know Alex in her talk yesterday talked about artists have a really interesting culture in soil, so I guess I fall into that category. So when I talk about local color, largely what I'm asking and talking about is this idea of how a community's earth inspires its art. And I'm going to share a little bit today about how the local earths that I've interacted with have inspired my art. So I typically break my processes into three parts, my practice into three parts. The first is that of being a pilgrim. And so, of course, finding the earth. And I should be clear, I'm actually using the word earth because although soils are a large part of what I collect, and I certainly love ochres, as they're known in art, I also, you'll see, do deal with rocks and bones and other odd things that you sometimes find. So as a pilgrim, the OED defines pilgrim as a person who journeys to a sacred place. And because of my own worldview in that, sort of every place is sacred, and therefore I know that when I'm going to these very special places with color, that's a big part of my own travel. It's also meant, though, the people I know who have taken pilgrimages to more traditional places talk a lot about the journey, the adventure involved there. And so there are really probably three examples I can give, fairly recent examples, of what that looked like in for myself. Last month, I had the chance to visit Devon, Alberta. And this is sometimes, I think, what people think of when they think of a pilgrim or a pilgrimage, which is sort of seeing the earth alone. What you're seeing here is about a 600-foot outcrop along the river. The river is extremely low right now. And so this is my day hiking along those ridges, finding some really exciting colors, especially some of the ochres were just bright and beautiful. And of course, as I'm walking, my bag's getting heavier and heavier, so that's probably part of suffering is part of pilgrimage too. So there we are. And then basically just having a really fulfilling, a really good time by myself out in the looking at the soils. But another example happened last year, and that came out of the idea of pilgrimage with strangers. And so here, last year, I got to visit Princeton, British Columbia, which has something called the Vermilion Bluffs. And this actually is the response to a Facebook announcement I put out there saying, hey, does anybody want to go on a pilgrimage with me? The response meant having a little convoy of cars driving to the Rockies for 2.5-3 hours, going down these sort of abandoned trails. Only met one mother bear and her cub, which is interesting. But eventually, coming to these very ancient, time out of memory, special places that have been used to collect color for art making. And as you can see, wide range of people responded, including two prison guards and somebody with a really big sense of humor for their t-shirts. So anyway, it was a really It was a great pilgrimage. So 1 year further back, actually this January, but then also a couple years previous to that, I also had a new kind of pilgrimage experience around seeing the earth within a specific culture. And I think this one's actually kind of special. So this is actually the children, the Luseno children from one of the First Nation reserves in San Diego County. And so they very kindly passed them on to myself as well as Nori, Dr. Nori. And we went and found a gabbro, a nice brightly colored gabbro, on their ancestral land, and then proceeded to actually experiment with it and ultimately interpret it within their culture. And so that was, for me, another kind of really special way of interacting with it. The second part of my practice has to do a lot with the palette itself. So taking the earth, usually back to my studio, and then actually making it into pigment. And so here, there's a couple things that I've learned, mainly the hard way, because that seems to be the only way I actually learn. The first one is that in doing this, I'm very much trying to keep the connection to the place. And so an early example of this was to actually take some very iron-rich soils back to my studio. And I'm not a chemist, but through some generous friends, actually worked with it through a number of acids and basically got it back to pure iron oxide, which was very exciting. And I realized what a huge failure that was because the connection to the place had been lost and how important those impurities and those things that aren't quite categorizable are. The second, and more recently, is really around this idea of also trying to see the earth as something that can in some way be fulfilled through artistic experiences. So a great example of this would be the course that Ken, as you can see, is looking very happy there, as well as Allison, Glenn, and myself offered at the University of Saskatchewan this past year and a couple years before that, which brought together graduate level soil scientists as well as Masters of Fine Arts students, mash them together for a week and get them to create their own palette, as well as paint and other things. So the students literally largely interact with soils as well as some bones and other things that we provide them with, and go through the same processes that I do in my studio, including things like firing, you saw the grinding, we all get really dirty, and in the end, create these beautiful colors out of a selection of soils and other materials from different places. Just in case you think it's only doable out in the wilderness, four years ago now, I also gave a workshop while I was in Berlin in a condemned building. And we sort of took this over for the weekend and proceeded to figure out how we could make color from this building that had been there for 140-odd years. So that meant actually chiseling out the bricks, as well as other things, the rust, everything else that made up this building, and using old window panes, whatever else to actually grind it up. But basically, through the processes of really just pulverizing it, we created some really great colors out of a space and a place in an urban context. So lastly, the last part of my process then gets a bit more personal, and that's really around the idea of taking the pigment, so the place, the pigment, and finally getting to the art making itself, which for me then returns full circle to my beginning. While the pilgrimage stories and the palette documentation are supportive and actually allow, I think, people to interact with the local colors themselves, I also personally love the idea of the icons in their own way, witnessing every place as beautiful. And while that may sound, oh, give me a hug for a moment, you may see there's a couple interesting things where it gets a little bit less comfortable. So some recent examples of that, of actually sharing sort of the pilgrimages as well as the palettes and the final iconographic work, are things like this. Finding Canada's local colors, which was in Halifax this year, Kamloops around connecting the dots, because as you saw, I tend to draw things with lines and dots. So that was fun. Here's the Berlin piece that actually came out of the building, in making kind of a constellation of colors. In Elora, which is fairly close to Conestoga, this was actually the juxtaposition of two different places. one being from Cobalt and the other being from Madoc, and showing how the colors that I actually tinted, black and white photography that I tinted using the local colors pigments, create such a different impression of the place. That was kind of fun. And then lastly, I thought I would also mention something that kind of got as big as this project, the 100 Mile Art Project, which basically meant spending about a year collecting all the different possible colors that I could find in a year, and then distributing them out into the community for interpretation. So, to wrap up, here's a fairly recent example of St. Peter. Painted, all the colors come from within a stone's throw of my studio, and I think you can see fairly immediately that a lot of the color for the flesh as well as the outer robe is coming from this riverbank, which is probably my favorite place of pilgrimage because it means that I get to visit it often and my kids get to come, and it's just really great. But perhaps the thing a little bit more complex is here's St. Paul, and his palette comes from Londonderry, Nova Scotia. This is an old mining dump in which there's quite a lot of disruption of the earth. Mining itself, I know, can be a complex issue, some environmental movements and such. But also, these colors are actually all here because the mine closed up when the dam broke, and there was massive loss of life and everything else. So these are very interesting colors in some way historically. But probably my favorite example, and a fairly earlier one, is that this is St. Barbara, painted entirely from a place called Cobalt, Ontario. Cobalt, turn of the 20th century, was famous for its silver, massive amounts of silver. But the mining that happened there has actually left the earth with these huge segments of bright green, which is basically anabergite, and is arsenic and toxic. So this appeared in a show which actually had a large sign, "Please don't kiss the icons," because traditionally the way of greeting an icon in an Orthodox church is you kiss it. And so I thought this was actually interesting to play with that juxtaposition as well around things that are beautiful but we can't, or we have to work with. Anyway, let me just end quickly by saying thank you to the host of people who have helped and put up with me. As you can see, one thing I really love is the sort of interdisciplinary way that a lot of my work comes into contact with people and how these different approaches are so enriching. So, thank you.
We have time for one or two questions. Simeon.
I was struck by the beautiful gradient in his halo on the first image.
Yes. So that's gold, and a traditional part of the icon. It was an interesting consideration whether or not I should actually make that part of the local color or not. But because the halo is such a iconic part of the work, I left it there. I don't actually collect gold and make it myself. I'd be better dressed if I did. So yeah. Anyway. So. Yeah, Scott. Yeah. Well, so a lot of the blacks come out of bones. And so I was actually in Edmonton, I don't know, a month and a half ago, working with a woman who had done a bone exhibition, and I basically burned her entire exhibition and made black for other artists. No, it was her, she wanted this. Anyway, I really sounded bad there. Anyway, so we did this big project where we actually returned these animal parts into the earth as ash, but then as black, also then sent it on to other artists to reinterpret. Personally, my own work actually comes from the cherry pits. We have two cherry trees on my property, and so every year we eat the cherries, and the actual cherry pits then get burned. But most of the blacks do come out of that. That's tricky. There tends to not be a lot of opacity. And because I'm using egg yolk as a binder to make paint, there's also usually over a certain amount of time it becomes, well, fungus and things grow. So, no, I tend to stick to sort of the carbon-based, although there are some earths. You saw the one slide from Devon. I'm really excited about seeing those pockets, which is sort of a coal slash malachite segment. So we'll see what that turns into color like.
One last question from Alex.
Yes. Thank you for asking that. The actual course ends with an exhibition being mounted in the university's gallery, and the results are amazing. Montreal was the same. We actually did a sort of a one-day course, and it's very, I think, Ken and I, in the work we've done, usually start with the pigments, but it always ends with the art making. And what's been great is, while the artists, you would think, oh, the artists have no problems, and the scientists are going to struggle. Well, the scientists tend to be amazed at what they can do. This is possibilities here they just didn't know they had capabilities of, and it's been really wonderful to see. But the artists struggle maybe even more because they're used to having every color. In the last 100 years, with the proliferation of sort of chemically produced and brightly colored paints, the idea of, sorry, no blue until Thursday, literally has been really problematic for some of the artists. But thanks.
Anyway, thank you, Simeon.